Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 686, we're going to talk to comedian Jolene Lunzer out in Los Angeles, California, about being funny to different groups of people, the business of comedy, and following your dreams. In podcast 686. There's something new and fun to do these days, whether it is a date night, business client appreciation event, a corporate team building event, something with your family, or a friend's night out. It's at Brush Studio West End in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Now, I can tell you that an artist will guide you through making and creating a painting. And I can tell you that you'll come away with a real painting, something you can hang on your walls at home or at work, something you and your friends and your coworkers or your family would be really proud of. But the other night, I actually went over to Brush Studio, and it's actually better if I take you inside a Brush Studio event a little bit, and you can kind of hear the reaction and what people do. So let's go on into Brush Studio.
Do you mind if I ask you some questions?
Sure.
You guys having fun?
Yes.
Yeah. Tons of fun.
What are you painting?
We're painting birch trees. In the nighttime with a little cardinal.
We're trying.
So they give you paint, right?
Yeah, and you just follow the people at the front.
The person at the front.
Yeah, the person at the front. And then you just follow their breaks and everything. And yeah, I don't know.
It's really fun.
Different thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, on a Friday night.
And a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're having a good time. We got the whole family here.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So
I got my wife and our two sons and their fiance and one's girlfriend.
I didn't even know I could.
This is one, probably the most fun you can have at a job. Seriously. My favorite part is when people just completely go off the rails and do something that I would never think of or other people wouldn't think of, but they came here with like an intention. It's a thing to do on a Friday night that isn't watching TV, isn't going to a movie. You're being social with a group. You get a little wine or something, but it's not like that's all you're at a bar, that's all you're there to do, you know. I've been teaching for 22 years.
Oh, okay.
And I make all kinds of stuff on my own.
You look like an artist. You have
what?
Fun?
Oh,
you
absolutely.
You look like an artist.
I just found my inner artist.
Your inner artist.
Yeah.
Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park. 22 brands of beer, an extensive wine collection, catering from Crave in the West End. You're going to have a good time because they are event planning ninjas at Brush. Date night, client appreciation, corporate team building, family, friends. They'll all be great. Sign up online at Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park at brushstudio.net. Brushstudio.net, or you can reach out to Brush at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. Oh, by the way, there's plenty of parking in the West End, St. Louis Park. Well, I want to, I'm really looking forward to doing this podcast because I have known Jolene for a long time, going back to KSTP when she, you had worked for the Minnesota legislature, as I recall. And didn't your mom work there too? Didn't Narnar work there? Or was that?
Narnar works there. My brother works there now. My aunt works there. It's the best.
So Jolene had worked at the legislature and then you were working at KSTP and, you know, you always had a great sense of humor, but I had no idea that you were going to go embark on this comedy career, which, you know, talk about getting a real job, right? You gave up this fantastic government job to ply your trade with the circus, literally. And I want to talk about that odyssey. So going back, how many years has it been? Not to, because I know you're only 23, but how many years has it been?
Yeah, 22 and a half. Yeah, well, my first job out of college, I went to UW River Falls for journalism. And I thought, I saw this receptionist job opening at KSTP. And I thought, great, I'll do that for a couple of weeks. They'll throw me on the air. Done.
That's how it's supposed to work, right?
Well, yeah, that's how you hope when you're 22 years old. And that didn't happen. I think I was there for 3 years working directly under Mary, who was great. She was the business and operations
person. Yeah, Mary was awesome.
Yeah, I think she's still there.
Yeah, I'm sure. I should say is, because it makes it sound like she's deceased or something. But
she's gone.
Love Mary.
And I really enjoyed, I mean, I didn't love being a receptionist. No, I don't. I did not at all. But I really like being around radio people. I really liked being around you. And I thought it was such a cool environment because I was around, you know, a conservative talk radio station, a woman's talk radio station, and then that channel that they play when you're at the dentist.
KS95.
Yeah, KS95. And everyone was so great. And people would let me come on their show sometimes. Sometimes I got to do commercial stuff. And then I decided in 3 years into working there to follow a boy to Phoenix. And that didn't work out, but I
That's right. Go ahead. Sorry. I forgot all about that.
I followed a big cheater to Phoenix.
Was it an episode of Cheaters?
Oh, it pretty much was. I was like in the email, found it out. And that was like 8 years of my life.
Oh,
you just don't know. You waste your 20s and you're like, oh, those were my best years. And I spent it there. But anyways, what good came out of it was that I started comedy in Phoenix. And that's kind of how I got, I feel like I got my own voice. I felt like I got my self-esteem back. I said peace out to the cheater dude. And I just started and I fell in love with it because I'd always loved stand-up comedy. I'd watched it growing up with my dad, like Louis Anderson, obviously as a Minnesotan, was my hero. And then I got to go to Vegas within a year or two of being a stand-up and perform with him.
Really?
So I've performed with Louis a couple times. He's great.
He's a very giving. I think he's a very giving guy to up-and-coming comedians. And I think that's really great. That's one of the good things about him.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And then I just kept doing it. And I just kept getting further and further involved in stand-up. And I decided I was either going to go to New York or L.A. Because as a stand-up, you know, if you want to make a career out of this, you want to become a writer in television, you have to go to New York or L.A. I chose L.A. I met a new guy in Phoenix who also happened to be a comedian who I then married. We moved back up to Minneapolis for a couple years. Or actually, I was only for about 18 months. Saved some money in my parents' basement. Made a comedy album together. And sold it. Saved that money. Went to Los Angeles.
Wow. Well, that's this is the thing about following your dreams. So people say, oh, I could never do that. While you were always funny, I don't think anybody ever looked at you and said, she should be a comedian. You chose that because that was in you to do that. It's got to be the hardest thing to do in entertainment. Is it as hard as people say it is when you first start?
It is. And I wish more people knew it and would stop trying it. And because in LA, you get a lot of actors that were like, my manager told me to be a stand-up. It's like, that doesn't translate. You're reading someone else's lines because stand-up is the last true art form, not to be a total snob about it, but I will, where it's just you up there performing. You're the writer. You're the performer. You're the star. Everything falls upon you. You can't blame anyone else for if you succeed or if you fail. So it's a truly beautiful art form that it's amazing, too, especially in 2017, people will still pay to go see a person just behind a microphone saying what they think and telling jokes. Like, yeah. I think that's pretty cool.
And it's, you know, the other thing I like about it is it's topical. So you're dealing with stuff that's current event stuff that, you know, might not be funny 5 years from now, but it's funny in the current time frame. And that's very difficult to do. Very difficult to do, I think.
It's hard. I mean, I didn't think I'd ever be able to do it, even though I kind of always wanted to, because I was terrified of public speaking, because people, usually their biggest fear is death in public speaking.
Right.
And in college, I waited till my fifth year senior moment to take my freshman speech class, because I was so terrified. I would get anxiety, panic attacks. And then I think it was good because I started stand-up at 29, so I was older. I don't think I could have started when I was younger. I started when I was about to enter a new decade in my life where I was kind of like, either I do it now or
right.
I don't. So I kind of had that moment where it's like now or never.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of people would have said it's now or never. Well, I'm going to get married and move to St. Louis Park and get a house and have five kids because that's what my mom and my grandmother did, you know, and you didn't do that. And I think that's takes a lot of courage to just say, I'm doing this.
Well, thanks, Bob. Sometimes I do call my mom crying from Los Angeles and say, I wish I just wanted to be a dental hygienist with a riding lawnmower living in Woodbury, but...
Well, you could have worked at the legislature. You got a family business at the legislature, right?
Listen, I think I dodged a bullet. I do not work. I was there in the days of Bachman when they were still drinking there, so I was offered alcohol by senators.
Oh!
Back in the...
Oh, days. Me too! I'm just kidding.
Just to spill some tea on them, that's what happened.
Well, you know, you remember my son when he used to play chess with Kodiak, and he was mm-hmm. like 9 or 10, and he'd sit there, and he worked for Congress. He was an aide at the Capitol, and he had the same reaction that you did. He was just like, these guys aren't doing anything. This is just a... And I think he thought it was going to be this... You know, I think he thought it was going to be this incredible place where all these things happened, and it wasn't like that. So
I grew up like believing that you know, I was going to work in this important area. Like, I grew up, my dad's a Teamster. We were like hardcore Wellstone supporters. Like, he walked picket lines with my dad when they went on strike. I thought everyone was Paul Wellstone. And then I went to the Minnesota State Senate, and I was like, there are no Paul Wellstones left.
So let's talk about the business of comedy. And then I'm going to come back. I'm going to circle back and talk about the difficulties in being funny and the topicality, given how frustrated everybody is right now and or how angry they are. And I'm not politically biased, and I don't do that. I don't advocate. I don't say yay or nay. I have friends on both sides of the quote unquote political divide.
Yeah.
But when you're standing in front of a group of people, that's got to be hard to say, I'm going to make a joke about Trump, and what if they don't laugh? Although I think a lot of Trump people would laugh at some of it, but some of them don't. They're very serious, and they don't think it's funny. So we'll talk about that. But I want to talk about the business of comedy, because you've certainly done the stand-up, but you're also doing this business of comedy. You guys went out there and you started writing. You did the comedy album that you sold yourself. So I know there's more going on there than just doing stand-up all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like you can't, unless you have some really good television credits, you can't really make your living just off stand-up. A lot of people, if they're able to create like a very successful one-person show, that's something you can make a living off of. But basically, as a stand-up comedian, you have to go into other art forms. You know, you have to go into writing. So stand-ups want to have a writing packet, which consists of like a pilot and a late night packet and screenplays. And so you can't just do comedy anymore. They want you to be a content creator, and they want that content to be all over the place. They want to know your Twitter followers. They want to know your Instagram followers. They want to know your YouTube subscribers. It can be very overwhelming and also very frustrating, because you're like, I just want to go tell jokes. And I love writing, but I feel like we're an art form where people want us to create content for free. Mm-hmm. And then when it gets popular or goes viral, a manager or someone will step in and go, I'll help you now.
Yeah. Now that you've done all the work, I'm going to help you, which means you're going to do all the work. And they're pretty much not going to do anything. And I think, well, you know, that's just not only true in comedy. It's true everywhere. They look at your YouTube channel and go, well, you have 73 followers. And it's like, yeah, dude, I'm not working on the YouTube channel. So it's just there as a placeholder. Yeah, but, or they want to know, they look at your Facebook page and they say, well, you only have, you know, whatever, 1,000 followers. Again, I'm not interested in that. I'm working on blah, 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 blah. So it's a difficult thing to do. You do have an Instagram. So, and then you did this blog for a while, the Pale Girl thing. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I did a Pale Girl blog. Well, I used to write.
Loved.
It was pretty satirical, and I also didn't necessarily use my name for a long time because I was still working, you know, in the corporate world and was afraid of that. So I look back on old posts and go, oh, yeah, that's why I didn't use my name. That's pretty dark.
It was edgy, though.
It was what?
It was edgy.
Yeah, and I liked it, and that's my humor is edgy. I mean, it's evolved a little over time, but I did that, and then I also did a Moody Girl blog where I blogged about mental health, like the humor.
Yes.
Of mental health. And I really enjoy writing a lot about that.
Do people, because I know you got Deal With It podcast. Mm-hmm. Where can we find that podcast, by the way?
iTunes.
What?
Yep.
iTunes.
You can go on iTunes to find it, and then we have a website, dealwithitshow.com.
That's right. And I didn't realize at first that it was, it's about mental health issues and health issues. And I don't know how the comedy part gets put in there, but it's pretty damn funny, some of the stuff I've seen that you posted with it. And then you got married to Bravo. What's that all about?
Well, this is a project that I personally love because Bravo Television, I don't know if you're a fan, Bob Davis, you watch The Real Housewives or anything?
I don't watch, you know what I'm a fan of? I've been watching The Crown. I've been watching White Famous. I've been watching Smilf. Shameless, I'm iffy on, especially now. It's just almost absurd. And so I was down to, there's a show called One Good Shot on Netflix, which is LA guys who are stringers that follow, drive around all night and get into mayhem and video it. And then they get the, it's a great show. And it was only two seasons. So I'm down to documentaries now. I've actually watched everything for this week. So that's what I watch. I never watch Bravo.
Watching Housewives. You're not. A lot of podcasts that I would watch, like I'm a big, like my favorite television show of all time is Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's right. Buffy.
I feel like I'm Buffy. We graduated the same year. We went to college the same year. I feel very Buffy. And I started listening to podcasts that would do recaps of Buffy episodes. And I really liked it because it's like I had other fans there that were geeking out as much as I was. And then I was thinking, well, how can I create a podcast of something I like that other people can, you know, kind of create a sense of community for that? And it was Bravo Television, which has the Real Housewives reality television show. I know it's a guilty pleasure that I don't feel very guilty about.
Hey, you know what? It's demographics. So women are interested in that. And, you know, men are watching Ted Nugent or something, or, you know, the One Good Shot or some masculine, you know, we're going to get to this, you know, and it's great because the guy's on the freeway and it's the middle of the night. So he's on the Ventura Freeway and he's like, all right, we got a car fire up here and we got to haul ass and get there. And he's, you know, get out of the way and all this other stuff. That's a guy thing. We like that kind of action. You like the romance and the fantasy world of Buffy.
Well, I do like that. I do like the romance aspect of Buffy a lot. But I've actually included my husband in Married to Bravo reluctantly. He is not a fan of Bravo Television. But
we'll see.
Premise for the podcast is I love Bravo. He hates it. But unfortunately for him, when he married me, he also married Bravo. So.
Oh, I get it. I thought, because I've never listened to it, but I thought that you, I thought you called him Bravo, so then you were married to Bravo. See, that's how dumb I am. That's funny.
No, the television station. And it's been great because other women have reached out to us whose husbands hated Bravo and then listened to our podcast and were like, I guess I'll give it a try. And then there's also a lot of men that actually watch Bravo television shows. There's a lot of actors that have come out, like Michael Rapaport. He's a huge Housewives fan. Jerry O'Connell. Like, they're always talking about Housewives.
See, this is the problem with preconceived notions.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So my husband doesn't. We've done probably 60 episodes now, and he still doesn't love it. But it's what, I mean, he signed the marriage contract.
That's right. Happened. He asked it better for better or for worse for Bravo or, you know, whatever the male equivalent of Bravo is. I don't even know.
For me, it's probably the Minnesota Vikings because I don't enjoy watching football.
Well, I don't know. Are they doing well or something this year? I don't even know what's going on with the Vikings.
I think they're doing well. My husband loves them. So I like hockey. I like the Minnesota Wild. That's my thing.
Well, Jolene, I know we're not going to get into trade protection in this podcast, but I do want to talk about foreign manufacturing and trade protection, because this is becoming obvious that there's going to be some policies, whether it's going to be the tax bill or other policies, that's going to try to put pressure on companies to bring manufacturing back to the United States if they're manufacturing overseas. We call it reshoring. If you are a company that has some manufacturing, all manufacturing overseas, and you're thinking about reshoring, think about Depot Star, American Design Manufacturing and Engineering. These are great guys. They do medical devices. They do avionic devices. They do repair. They do all kinds of things at Depot Star. Check them out online at depotstar.com. DEPOT, depotstar.com. Very quickly also, I want to mention that really appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting in Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and really appreciate the donations. Greg Stamp just sent me $20. Greg Greg's a longtime listener to the Bob Davis podcast, as well as going back to KSTP, Jolene. So really appreciate that, Greg. Also, you can hear the Bob Davis podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Google Play, Spreaker, right off the page at TheBobDavisPodcast.com for streaming. So when you hit the page on a desktop, it starts playing. Then when you select a podcast to listen to, you can listen to it with the player on the podcast, and the streaming stops. Also on a device, then you would initiate the streaming yourself. There's a little big red button with a play, and you can hit that, and you can listen right off the page at TheBobDavisPodcast.com. All right, so I promised that we would talk about the difficulty of communicating with people, especially in a room where there are people that might hail from different perspectives, because everybody thinks, so I'm prefacing this question with the statement that everybody thinks the country is literally red or blue, that you're either, and now it's worse because now it's either Trump or Bernie Sanders. And everybody has to agree or disagree. And when you go into a room, you know, three quarters of them are going to be this and two quarters of them are going to be that. And if you don't, blah, 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 you've got to play to the room and everything else. How hard is it these days to make fun of the left in Los Angeles?
I think it's hard. Yeah. I was at a comedy show recently, and there were actual comedians who are on the right and comedians on the left, and they kind of talked about the difficulty with that. And I think you have to be very clever to be able to do it, and it's a harder job than making fun of Trump right now. I think that's the current climate. People are like, no.
Well, the thing about Trump is he provides, I mean, some of the people that listen that are going to be on the right are going to get mad to hear this, but he is a character. So he's going to be made fun of. And people say, well, why didn't they make fun of Obama? And because Obama was literally rye toast. I mean, he just didn't do anything. You could really, you know, the guy that is on White Famous makes fun of Obama all the time in the show because he does an imitation of Obama. And it's really interesting how they treat that. If you haven't seen that show, it's really interesting. I forget the guy's, I don't know the star's name, but it's a story about a black comedian who's on the verge of becoming, you know, mass appeal. So they call that White Famous in the show. And I guess they call it that. I don't know. But he's amazing. Like, he does amazing impressions. And one of them is Barack Obama. And they're all like, you can't imitate, he's, you know, you can't imitate Barack Obama. He's an icon in the black community and blah, blah. It's disrespectful. And he's like, it's funny. I'm sorry. And it's a big thing. But do you find that that's true, that people are immediately recoil if there's anybody making fun of anyone? Like, I don't know, Nancy Pelosi. What if you got up and put on a Nancy Pelosi wig and stuttered and didn't know where you were and stuff? Would they laugh?
Probably not.
That's why I'm not a comedy writer.
No, probably that probably wouldn't be what they'd laugh at. I tried to do earlier this year. I was just working on some material about the DNC and how I felt how they were treating Bernie Sanders, throwing him out to the wolves after Trump was elected, and basically were like, now you get to go do these town halls. Good luck. I mean, we didn't have your back, but now go save the party, even though you were never one of us. And it didn't get a good response.
Because what, they were Hillary people, or did you make fun of Hillary during the election?
No, I didn't have the only Hillary joke. I did have a Hillary joke, and I said, you know, I understand the Hillary email thing because Hillary, it's so old I can't remember because I only did it during the election, but Hillary treated her emails like all of our grandmas treat our emails. Like, she doesn't know. I forgot what my main punchline was, but it was basically like, you know, it was more of a play on, let's look at her age,
right?
And maybe not that it was done deliberately or she was trying to be malicious in the big email scandal, but to make a silly joke on it, like she was just treating it like all of our grandmas treat their emails. You know, because you
might get a response, but it might take 3 or 4 days because they're not up quick on the uptake. Grandma. Well,
they're wondering, like, what is she saying? Is she turning? No, I'm just, I mean, it's a joke basically on how my mom uses email.
Right.
You know.
So you do tours. So when you go to Phoenix, is it different? Or when you go, have you gone to Muncie, Indiana, or I don't know, Lafayette, Indiana, and done a show?
I've never done shows in Indiana, but next year, I think I have a couple on my calendar, and also Alabama, which I'm now like, oh my goodness.
Oh, that'll be. There's a lot there that's pretty funny. But exactly. I mean, it is. It, people's like, yo, why are they making fun of that? You know, that's not fair. It's like, dude, the guy went to vote on a horse. How can you not make fun of that?
He's a cartoon.
Yeah.
A really perverted cartoon. He's, no, it's just, I
allegedly perverted.
What'd
wink, wink. Allegedly.
Oh, allegedly. Okay, we'll go with that. it's, you know, I started in Arizona, which Arizona is a very red state, very conservative, but Arizona was always really good to me. I like the audiences. Do myself and the audiences always agree politically? No, but I think comedy, I'm trying to kind of transcend that and connect with them on a person level, and that, you know what, you might vote this way, I might vote this way, but here's a joke, let's all laugh. We could make fun of everybody.
Well, we all ought to do that, to be quite honest with you, because there's people are very brittle, and they shouldn't be. It's just politics, and it's not going to change.
Comics will get up there and get on their soapbox, and I know it's hard not to do that sometimes, but I think sometimes it just comes off as very pretentious. You're full of yourself. You don't have the answers. You're not the first person to ever say that. There's really no such a thing as original thought anyways, so calm down.
Are you talking about Hollywood people that suddenly become political?
Yeah, well, and I see some of these comics go out, you know, they're so used to doing LA shows, and then they go out into the real world, which is where I'm from, the real part of America, and they're like, well, they're so stupid. It's like, no, they're not. You 90% of this comedy game is being likable. So you can say whatever you want, but if you come off also as not likable, it's your fault. It's not theirs.
Oh, that's true. And I think that's true in life in general. You have to be likable, you know.
Yeah.
And my problem is I get too serious.
Not you, Bob. Not you.
And talk radio drove me crazy. I would get so, you know, you saw me. I would get so upset, and because you get ginned up for it. You had to get ginned up. You had to get up for it. It's a lot like comedy in that respect, is that you got to walk. You got to go out. Remember the first talk show I did? I had all this stuff, and I did it all in 20 minutes. And I went through the talk back and I said to Kodiak, what do I do now? I've done everything. He goes, just turn it over and start over, because nobody heard a word you said, because you talk a mile a minute. So I was like, okay, that's relatively good advice. So then you're going to do a tour, right? You were just saying you're going to do a tour or something like that. You're going to...
Yeah, I'll probably be doing like a mini Southern Atlanta, Nashville, a couple places. I'll hit up over there. So
you're going to get into, especially in Tennessee, you're going to get into... I don't want to say red America, because the thing is that all these places, how on earth does Alabama elect a Democrat senator? How on earth does Tennessee elect Democrats? They do all the time. I mean, the first Democrat came from Tennessee, mm-hmm. Andrew Jackson. So, how is it possible that they would be able to do that? But it's, so you're going to go to Nashville, which is, I wouldn't call it liberal, but I'd say that it's, no. It's a little bit more, urbane. It's a little bit more urban than some parts of Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I love going. I mean, I've went to Europe. We did a European tour and entertained the troops. We performed in front of. I mean, there were some times that we were on bases where nobody really spoke English.
Oh,
and
wow!
So, but that's the real thrill of comedy, and also the challenge of it is still being able to relate to someone who might think the exact opposite of you. And instead of being someone who's going to say, well, that's not my audience. Well, try, see what happens.
So when you do, when you're talking to service personnel, is there any adjustment in content, or do you do service personnel content, or do they tell you there's things you can't, you know,
they tell you. Like, you can't talk about drugs, not about sex. We push it a little because they want to hear it. They're grown adults. They're serving our country. I mean,
and they're young guys and women, right?
They're young men and women. And then sometimes their officers would be there. And then we'd, of course, as comics go, we can't say this because officer blah, blah. And then they laugh.
Oh, that's good.
Because they want us to roast him or her, you know? And it was probably the best experience I've ever had, comedy-wise. And I always feel guilty when people are like, wow, you went and performed for the troops. Thank you so much. And I'm thinking, they sent me to Europe.
No, thanks for your service.
Yeah, thank them. I didn't do anything. I got a free trip to Italy, Spain, Germany, Austria to perform in front of these wonderful people. So, no.
My nephew's in the Navy, and he had not been out of the United States, he's on the parachute jumping team, so he was jumping all the time, and he was in the U.S. and he'd get on a plane and he'd be wearing his fatigues, and they'd be like, "Thanks for your service." And he was like, "Dude, I haven't been anywhere. All I've been doing is jumping out of airplanes." And
they were, oh, that's so funny!
Thanks for your service. So
that's how I felt.
So what's ahead for you? What are you going to do now? Because I know you're going to do something.
I have so many projects that I'm working on. I'm really hoping to. I love writing. I would love to get a book that I've been working on for a couple years published. And it's basically a book of personal essays that are very funny about anxiety. It's called We're All Gonna Blow Up. And it's I've been working on that for a while. I love it. And then also just working on pilots and working with other comedians, other writers, trying to get, a project either, get a lit agent, get a project sold. That would be ideal for me.
Okay. Instagram, what's your IG handle?
At Pale Girl, girl is with a U.
Oh, and Where's the two podcasts?
You can go to Deal With It Show. Otherwise, you can also go to iTunes, and Married to Bravo is on iTunes.
All right. Now, I have one more question. So didn't you tell me you're named after that song, Jolene?
No.
You didn't?
Everyone assumes I am. I'm actually named after my mom wore a pair of shoes. They couldn't name me for days, and my mom wore a pair of shoes, and the name of it was Jolene, E-N-E, and she's Eileen, E-E-N, so she just changed it to Jolene, J-O-L-E-E-N. Very strange, but
you're named after a shoe.
Pretty much. I'm named after indecisive parents and my mother's shoes. So yeah,
your mother is a scream anyway. Your mother is a true character.
She should do stand-up. I'm trying to get her to go on the road with me and her mother-daughter stand-up. But
well, occasionally there's videos on Facebook too. Well, you're on Facebook, so what's your Facebook handle?
Jolene Lunzer, or you can go to Pale Girl Comedy.
You'll do videos with her and your is that your stepdad or your dad?
My dad.
Your dad.
It's actually just as funny, if not funnier, than my mom. She's going to hate that I said that. But he delivers, he hams it up for
the
kids.
He does.
And he pretends he doesn't like it, but he loves it.
He's a great straight man, I got to say. Because what was that one you did where you were? Because you've got this other feature called Don't Be a Dick.
Yes.
And I love that. I think that's, and I really love that one because it's, don't do it. What was the one? Don't be the guy that breathes too all over everyone else, or don't be the, I don't know. There's all these little things
it's
that you do.
Close talkers.
The close talkers. And you used him, and he just, it was great. He was a slab. Yeah. And you were like, the close talkers drive me crazy.
Well, there'll be more of those. I'm going home for Christmas, and I'm going to force my parents to be in more Don't Be a Dick videos.
So, as we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, remember there's something new and fun to do at Brush Studio in the West End, whether it's date night, business and corporate events, family or friends night out, especially last minute Christmas or holiday or New Year's parties. Think about brushstudio.net. They are event planning ninjas. Reach out to them at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brushstudio.net. Great talking to you.
You too. Thanks, Bobby. It was so good to see you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Boop. So anyway, that was it, man.
That was fun.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast. Podcast 686. Jolene Lunzer live from Los Angeles. Boop.